This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's actually early. It is 8:34 in the morning. Just had breakfast with a buddy. Always enjoy that. I'm heading back home. Got to be there by 9. Had a little grocery shopping to do because we're having the last small groups of the year, the calendar year, at our house tonight. And so need a little snacks. And so I picked up some of that from my beloved and we're heading back home. And hopefully I'll be there on time. So I think I'll make it. It's about 10, 15 minutes back home. And then I just got to get stuff unloaded from the car and get downstairs and get everything powered up. But I think we'll make it. We'll make it. We'll make it. I apologize. I've been trying to decide for days, actually for almost 2 weeks now, whether I'm having an allergic reaction to something or whether I've actually caught a little cold. Allergic reactions are unusual for me. Thankfully, with the type of eating I do, I can usually tell pretty quickly if something has given me an allergic reaction. And I think simultaneously to me attempting to increase my creatine input, I either started having an allergic reaction to it, or I don't know, maybe with the house being more closed up for winter, maybe the cat dander is finally starting to get to me. It hasn't in the past. I've been fine with all that, but I've been trying to nail this down, and it went through all the progressions of a normal virus. And so I thought, oh, it's just a virus, I'll be over it. And now it's kind of surged back up a little bit. So I'm trying to figure that out, because I don't like living like this. You know, I'm kind of snuffly, and my throat's a little sore. But not bad, it's just not clear as I usually am. So anyways, writing is going fine. I'm really just kind of lackadaisically moving into the second writing sprint of the last book of the series at this point. And I've set myself a goal of really just getting 10,000 words in over the space of 3 weeks. Because traditionally, I've picked up some extra time this time of year, and I haven't started my writing sprints until January 1st, and so that's allowed me to clean all the Amazon boxes out of the garage and take them to recycling and all those little oddball things that you kind of want to start the year a little more organized. So I'm kind of in the process of doing some of those, but I'm also in the process of doing the print for Mario Day, which is March the 10th. A lot of pieces there. I've got his hat printed. That was 27 pieces. I've got one of his shoes printed. That was 9 pieces. Finishing up on the other shoe, hopefully, today. I really need to stop and get some gas, but I will do that tomorrow. And then I've got to do his face and his hands. And then once I get... Oh, and his hair in the back... And once I get all those done, then I've got to do the stuff for Bowser. Get that all printed. And the difficulty is the gluing, because you need a certain temperature in the air for the gluing. And it was cold last week. I think it was a little too cold to glue, and that means I either have to like glue in the basement and kind of vent the air somehow. But this next week is supposed to be, we're having nice days here for a few. So I'm putting the writing kind of on the back burner while I'm getting all the gluing done. And this technically is the time when I'm off anyway. So it'll all work out. It'll be great. I do have a little shorter time today because since I was just at Walmart, that's only a 10 to 15 minute as opposed to a 20 minute. And I will need to get started working as soon as I get home. So that's the kind of wrap up for that. say a word of prayer for Dustin, the young man who lives in my rock house. He did finish everything up, done. The day he was going to walk across the stage to get his badge, he drove up to Marshfield to see a friend. And this guy tried to run him off the road a couple of times, followed him on the Marshfield exit. Dustin was on the phone with 911. They suggested that he park in a parking lot and the police would come. Well, he pulled into the parking lot. The guy blocked him in with his car and then pulled his car around so the driver's side windows were, you know, right next to each other. And then the guy looked down and started reaching in his center console, and Dustin was, you know, very concerned that the guy was going to pull a gun on him. So Dustin pulled his weapon. And, you know, there are laws in Missouri about brandishing your firearm. And the problem is they're a little vague. And to determine whether or not you are actually justified in holding a firearm requires the courts to get involved. So he got arrested and charged with them, you know, because he pulled his gun and pointed at the guy and said, "Leave me alone." And then the guy drove off. Well, then the police came after that and, you know, they interviewed him. Well, he had drawn his weapon and pointed it at the guy, and he told them that he had. And so at that point, you know, there's the potential brandishment charge, and it's not up to the police to figure out who did what or whether they were justified. So they went ahead and arrested him, charged him with felony assault and use of what do they call that? Not illegal use of a firearm, something. Anyways, one's a misdemeanor charge, the other one's actually a felony charge. And the problem is, if Dustin gets convicted of a felony, then his medical career is over. So today he's seeing a lawyer up in Marshfield, probably going to retain that guy's services, try to get it either thrown out altogether or plead down to some kind of a minor misdemeanor charge, you know, that won't affect his gun ownership and won't affect his work. So just say a word of prayer that all gets worked out. He was pretty tore up about all of it. And, you know, he admitted that he did the wrong thing, but in the moment, he just, you know, he really felt threatened. And that should be enough, but, you know, these things now have to get decided in court or by the prosecutor or by somebody. So he has a hearing on the second week of January. And then, of course, he's just got to work through the grind of all that. So say a word of prayer for him. I'd appreciate it. So just real quickly, because I don't know how extended I want to talk about this topic, but I mentioned last week that there was another conspiracy topic that I wanted to talk about that I really didn't want it to be true, but it has to do with 911. I remember with 911 watching the towers fall, or the second tower fall, I think. And it was so precise as it came straight down. I thought, and I said it out loud, this looks like it's a movie. It was so precise. And then the really peculiar thing is that hours later, having only been hit by a bit of debris, Building 7 collapsed, having only had a few office fires inside it. And it came down exactly like a controlled demolition. Like the whole interior structure came down first, and then the exterior structure came down 4 seconds later. And I was watching a podcast about Building 7, and I mean, the guy the guy who was talking has been investigating this for years, just like the guy with the moon landing has been investigating for years. But he was saying there's like, he's had a petition up to reopen the investigation into the fall of the Twin Towers and Building 7, because there's so many peculiarities about it. And he said his petition has something like 3,600 architects and engineers that have signed off on it and said, yeah, we really need to figure out what's happening here. Because steel buildings are just not supposed to fail like that. And there's just a bunch of weird stuff. I went and found what I thought would be the most respectable documentary on it. And I found a documentary by PBS called Seven that had this guy in it, plus a whole bunch of other people talking about this. And, you know, he was saying that, you know, it just seemed impossible. He said, you've got 47, it's only 47 stories. It's more than 300 feet from the North Tower. The collapse feels symmetrical. You know, the steel from a building, he said, in all the history they had had with steel buildings, steel from a building had never collapsed because of fires before. Especially not because of just office fires. I mean, you've got, he was saying that you really have to get up somewhere around 1,000 degrees before you can start affecting metal like that. And he said there were a lot of weird things about it. You know, for instance, Twin Towers fall, Building 7 falls. The next day, they are gathering up all the steel, throwing it in barges, sending it to China for recycling. They're not allowing anyone to do any forensic on it, which is highly, highly unusual. And so he's been gathering stuff. They, you know, for instance, one of the things is they actually had some people who had taken some of the steel from the building. Now, this is a chain of custody problem. Okay, these people say, oh yeah, I grabbed this steel from the building. This is from the 9/11 stuff. And he said, that steel is just like Swiss cheese. It's like thermite has burned through it. And then you say, well, hold on, wait a minute. Why would there be thermite? You know, and so you've got stuff like that going on. You've got all kinds of people that are looking at the simulations, for instance, that the National Institute for Safety something, NIST technology, I don't know. And they put together a simulation trying to prove that it was because of the fire and because a particular joint got expanded. And he's saying, yeah, but that joint can't expand because it's got plates that are put there specifically to keep it from expanding. And there's no way the heat was high enough to make it expand that much. So these are all standard building practices. And the interviewer, when he was talking to him about it, he said, but, you know, wait a minute. So we either have something here that's anomalous and that has done something that we weren't expecting and all the engineering said shouldn't happen, or there's another explanation that it wasn't the fires that brought the building down. And he said, right. He said, so has anyone done any kind of investigation? Have they revised the standards at all as to how to build these steel buildings? And the answer was no, nothing has changed. No one has changed anything. We just keep building buildings this way. And if there was like really a problem with building buildings that way, wouldn't we see these failures other places in the world? It's never happened since. So it's really interesting. So, you know, the documentary on PBS was called Seven. There's a ton of documentaries by all sorts of people on this, but there's just some things about it that, man, don't seem right. But lands, as soon as you say that Building 7 potentially came down because of controlled demolition. There wasn't time to put those charges in place. It was only hours after, and the building was being evacuated. So as soon as you open that possibility, now it's like, well, they had to be placed beforehand. Hey, they had to be placed beforehand. And then if they were placed there, does that mean charges were, you know, it changes the entire complexion of the 911 tragedy. And it's really, really hard to say what that might have looked like if, in fact, people knew, people in power knew what was coming. And there is one of the things that's been mentioned about 9/11 is the fact that there were major stock bets, major shorts that were put on airlines right before 9/11. It was like somebody knew the airline stocks were going to just get hit like crazy. So there's lots of interesting things in the world. And it's hard to know what's a conspiracy and what's not a conspiracy. But I contend, and will continue to contend, that as long as we stick and make sure our reactions and our minds and our hearts and our actions are under the umbrella, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. See, I'm better today. Even though I am coffee. That will guide us. That will guide us. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.